Hey, got the morning show here on Raglan Community Radio, and I want to welcome Stephanie Philp to the studio. Morning.
Good morning, Aaron. Good morning, listeners.
Stephanie comes in every few weeks, and we talk. We call this topic Inside Your Mind, and you're a neuro-linguistic programming trainer and coach.
Yeah.
But also, you do other things. You've just this week been running a course. What's the course you're running at the moment?
The course is the NLP practitioner course, a training course, which is 18 days. And the first block was last week called The Power of Personal Change, which is 6 days.
So people come from all around the place, to Raglan.
People from Tauranga, Christchurch, all over the place.
Yeah. Right, okay. And so that, and they'll be back again some other weeks?
In another 4 weeks.
You don't do three weeks all at once?
No. You usually can see by the end of 6 days, people go, my brain hurts. I'm full, my brain's full. I did try once, during lockdown, I was running a course and we had to go home after 2 days. And so I think we did 9 days in the next block so that...
To catch up.
Well, it's people coming from the South Island, you see, and then they got extra travel costs. So they all agreed, we'll do 9 days. And you could see after 6 days, that people are like, oh, God, there's a lot. And then at the end of 9 days, I said, so what do you think? I said, do you think I should run practitioner training in 2 9-day blocks or leave it as it is, 6 days? Yeah. And everybody went, 6 days, 6 days. So that seems to be, a good – people have got enough to go and practice and not too much that they can't cope,
Yeah, you don't want to fill up the brain so it's overflowing.
That's right.
So today we're going to talk about emotional states and how to shift them, I guess, is the thing. So are we victims of our – first of all, are we victims of our own emotions? Are we just along for the ride or we just have to put up with what happens? When I say it like that, I know you're going to say no, but let's talk about that a little bit.
Well, I think we've often been taught that some emotions are good and some emotions are bad.
Mm.
So it might be that happiness, joy, and all that, those are considered positive emotions, and sadness and anger and those emotions are not good or bad. And so
to be avoided.
To be avoided. So that's what people do. They try and avoid being sad or unhappy or angry. But, all emotions, they're just emotions, and they come and go. So in the space of a day, we might run through a gamut of different emotions depending on the context and what's happening around us. And we don't have to hang on to them. I mean, the word emotion means to move.
Mm.
So the idea is to express the emotions and so and appropriately. So, don't go out and take your anger out on somebody, but, maybe thump a cushion or scream when you're on your own somewhere or whatever
scream
it is.
Scream into the cushion.
So to let it go rather than hanging on to it or shoving it down.
Yeah.
Because all that happens is those emotions will come out as another time that's very inappropriate, So I forgot what the question was.
Well, are we victims of our emotions or do we have some control over emotional life?
We do have control over our emotions. I think the first thing for people to know is that we are in control of our emotions because we might have been brought up to believe that other people control our emotions. So, we'll often say, oh, you make me really, really sad or you make me really angry. So we're blaming somebody else for being angry rather than taking ownership of our emotions. And if we don't take ownership of our own emotions, then how are we going to change them?
Mm.
How are we going to have a different emotion? If we don't usually say to people, oh, you make me... you make me joyful. It's usually the negative things that we say to people. Occasionally we might say, you make me really happy. But usually we're accusing other people for our negative emotions.
Yeah. So let's talk about a time frame, because we were talking about this off the air. If you're really quite upset, you can't just flick a switch. Like, we don't control our emotions in the sense that we can say, okay, from this second on, I'm going to be happy instead of upset.
Mm.
Like there's physiological things happening in our body.
That's right.
We can feel the upset in our body, and those things have to dissipate. So what do we mean when we say we control our emotions?
If we kind of go back a step to whatever the context is, let's say, I can't think of an example offhand, a situation where there might be several people there and something happens, there'll be some people where... they're calm, cool and collected.
Yeah.
And other people are freaking out. So, and they're all sharing the same context. So what is it that's causing somebody to freak out and get all anxious and somebody yeah. else to go, well, it's just part of life and stay calm?
I guess we'd say they're primed for it.
Well, it could be. It could be their perception. So emotions come from, not from what's happening outside of us, but our interpretation of what's happening outside of us.
Yeah.
So we all experience the same kind of reality, you know, whatever that is. And then what happens is we process that external event through our five senses. According to our values and beliefs and memories and time and space and all of these different filters, and we delete like about 98% of it, and then that forms our perception, which really is kind of our reality, because so we all experience reality differently. And so then our state is a reflection of what we're thinking, of, right. of how we interpreted that external yeah. event. But if somebody's really upset, then as you say, they can't just go from that to something else. They need some intermediary thing to be able to calm down before they can change their state. So, you know, for me, if I'm upset about something, I'll go for a walk. So it could be, you know, just getting a bit anxious about something I've got to do, or I can't kind of focus on it because I've been looking at it for too long. You know, I'll go, right, okay, I'm going for a walk. So I go for a walk, and it's not just about going for a walk, though. It's about physical movement, yes, but also focusing on where I'm going and what I'm seeing. So if I'm going here, I'm going around the beach, for example.
So you don't go walk and then ruminate about the same thing?
No, because that's just making it worse. So yeah. you have to kind of step out of that emotion to a certain extent, and you might go back into it, but then it's like, okay, what I'm going, okay, I'm looking at the beach, I'm looking at the waves coming in, you know, there's white tips in the harbour or there's not, or I might be talking to somebody. So, you know, talking to somebody else that you meet can often lower that emotional level,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And so then once you've done that, then you can usually look at things more objectively for a start off. You know, like if I go back into the office, then I can go, oh, I can often fix whatever was annoying me before in 2 minutes because I've got a different state of mind now. I'm approaching it differently. So all of those things, even, you know, even looking up can change your state. I was saying to Aaron off air listeners that last week one of the exercises I get people to do is to walk around looking at the feet and be, you know, beating themselves up, you know, like they do. Like, I'm not telling them
verbally.
They have to beat themselves up.
Verbally,
yeah.
Yeah.
And then to look up and do the same thing. And, of course, they can't, because when you're looking up, you're accessing a different part of your brain. So when you're looking up, trying to beat yourself up is really, 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 really difficult.
Right. So you're looking up and saying, I'm so useless. And
yeah, but people can't do it.
I tried to do it then. I had to look,
yeah,
I had to look back down yeah. to say the word useless.
That's,
yeah.
that's right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, even this is a really, really powerful thing, looking up. I mean, even we even say things are looking up.
There's a clue, isn't it? It's a clue there. Yeah.
And when we're not feeling good, we say, I feel really down, or I feel really low, because we're looking down.
Mm.
And when we're looking down, we are generally talking to ourselves and feeling a certain way. So we could be talking to ourselves and saying, you know, I'm the best thing since sliced bread, and then we're going to feel good. Or we could beat ourselves up and tell ourselves that we're useless and incompetent and all of those things and feel bad.
Yeah, and I do that, like, since you've talked about this, I do this because I walk quite a bit on the way home into work.
Right.
And definitely looking up.
Looking up,
if
yeah.
If I'm to find myself ruminating on something, just look up at, like, the sky and the tree yeah. line and yeah. things like that.
Yeah. And yeah. and then focus on that. So, you know, looking at it. So we can look at things but not see things.
Yes. Yeah.
And so it's looking at it and actually seeing it, because it's taking your attention outside of yourself rather than the ruminating thoughts going on inside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this gets us out of an upset space or an anxious space.
Yeah.
Yeah. if we're really deeply depressed, like, I think that's pretty challenging. Like, people will say, oh, that's a hard one. Like, you can't just come right back up out of that by going for a walk.
No. So if people have been depressed, they've kind of rewired the neurology in a certain way, and that, you know, there's a chemical imbalance or something in the brain, and it's not as easy. And also, there's a lot of habitual thinking,
yeah,
that's carried on over time. So that's become the norm instead of, you know, being happy and joyful or whatever the opposite is.
You've got a habit of looking for the negative stuff.
Got a habit of looking for the negative things. And so people can get depressed for a lot of reasons, but some people don't realise that the language that we use, so they say that language is wired in at birth, even though, you know, you can't speak at birth, it's there, all the equipment's there.
Yeah.
And that words have an impact on... Well, I know that words have an impact on your neurology and how you feel. And so if we continue to use negative words to ourselves, then we're going to feel bad. And I always say to people, you know, use Steph's rule that you're only allowed to talk to yourself the way you'd talk to somebody that you cared about. Because, you know, I've worked with a lot of people who are depressed, and often there's times when they're not depressed and they don't notice those. They only notice when they are depressed. So, you know, there's still things that they can do, like, you know, looking up, noticing how they're talking to themselves and changing it, challenging it. I'm just thinking there's an article on the website. I can't think what it's called now. Well, one's called Things Are Looking Up, I think it's called, How Eye Accessing Can Change Your Thinking, something like that. If people go to the website, insideyourmind.com, anyway, I've just got 97 articles on there now.
So eye accessing is part of looking up.
Yeah.
Like where our eyes are looking kind of determines what's going on in our brain to a degree.
That's right. So if we're this isn't when you're looking at somebody or looking at something. It's we move our eyes to access information in our head. So we might look up and to the left when we're remembering things.
Yeah.
And up to the right when we're imagining things. You know, people could just, you know, as they're listening, I could say, what's the colour of your front door? And, you know, people will look up and to the left and go, oh, it's green or something. Or they might look straight ahead if it's familiar, like if it's black or white or something. And then you might have to ask, something with more detail, like, I don't know, what shade of white or what shade of green is it, you know? And so that often I'll look up then to the left and to the right, and learning how people look is part of being a good NLP practitioner, because you can start to tell what, by where people move their eyes, what kind of thinking they're doing. So if they're looking across level with their ears to the right or the left, they're remembering sounds and conversations or imagining sounds and conversations. And then down to their left is self-talk, so talking to themselves. And then down to the right is feelings and emotions.
Yeah.
So feelings like what, you know, what my coffee cup feels like or what my shirt feels like, and feelings like sadness and happiness and all the other emotions. And so... people that are depressed are really looking down, talking to themselves, and depending on the kind of language they use, which isn't often good, you know, they'll feel bad. So they're looking from left to right, but down.
So you could short circuit that, like if you're doing a lot of negative self talk, instead of like trying to hold on and not say more negative stuff, just look up and the self talk stops.
And the self talk stops.
Yeah,
and it's kind of like. People go, oh, my God, you know, like I remember years ago, I was telling these guys last week, I was at a party in Auckland where I used to live, and there was a guy there, and he was talking to me. He said, what do you do? And I told him. And he said, oh, you should see my son. And I said, oh, why? Now, this guy was a psychiatrist, right? Sounds like a joke, but it's true.
Yeah.
And I said, I should see your son. Can't you see your son? And he goes, well, no, because I'm too close. I said, what's up with him? He says, well, he split up with his girlfriend about 8 months ago. And he's really depressed. So I said, okay, then get him to ring me up and come over. So in the room that I had, it was right in the centre of the house, and it didn't have a window in it. It had a skylight. So there was natural light coming in, but it was a skylight. And so I noticed that he was looking down, you know, because we say all things, you know, I'm feeling really low or I'm feeling down, or I'll think of the word downright miserable.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we experience downright miserable, and language isn't coincidental. So I said to him, what are some of these things that you say to yourself? And so he told me. And I said to him, okay. And he had a cap on. I said, can you take your cap off? Because that's the other thing. If people wear caps with a big brim, when they look up, all I see is black or whatever the colour of the hat is, you know?
To tilt your head.
Yeah, yeah. So I said, can you take your cap off and then look up at the skylight and now, you know, repeat those things to yourself? And so he looked up at the ceiling and about 20 seconds later, he just burst out laughing. And I said, what are you laughing at? And he says, well, it can't be that simple, can it? And I went, no, because the pharmaceutical companies would go out of business, wouldn't they? And he goes, so, you know, we talked about some other things that he could do, but that was the main thing. And he was on holiday here. He lived in Wales, I think it was. And every few days I get an email from him telling me where he was and how good he was feeling.
So he didn't need – he probably – gone through the actual trauma of the breakup and everything.
Yeah.
And that had been done, but he was still just kept looking at his shoes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Another guy had the same thing, you know, just reminding me about the cap. So he had a black cap on and it's had a really big brim. Like it seemed like it was noticeably, like you've got a cap on and yours is just like an ordinary cap, but he seemed to have this ginormous brim on it. And I took him outside and I just live by One Tree Hill and I said to him, Can you look up and tell me what happens? And he says, everything's black. And I went, oh. I said, take your cap off. And he says, no, I can't. And I went, what do you mean you can't? You know, is it glued to your head or something? He says, bad hair. And I said, I don't care. Take your cap off. I said, you can put it back on in a minute. And so he took it off. And I said to him, now look up and let me know what happens. And it was like it discovered a whole new world.
Well, yeah, notice half the world.
Yeah. Oh, the sun's shining. And I went, yeah, I said, you can put your cap on for now, but I suggest you either get one with a smaller brim or get a haircut, you know, so you don't have to wear the cap.
Yeah.
And it sounds like it's really, really simple, but some things are really simple. You know, they don't have to be complicated. If people know them, then they can use them to live a better life and be in a good mood more frequently.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So a question around... Like I know there would be people saying, but what about deep seated trauma? And I guess we're saying, like, there's some stuff that's really deep seated that you can't solve it all by just looking up at the sky.
No, it's not a temporary fix. You can't keep looking up at the sky, but then you're going to bump into something, aren't you?
Our eyes are capable of seeing quite a wide range. So.
Yeah, and when I'm saying looking up, you don't have to look at the sky. You just have to look up, like on a. I suppose, to where people would consider their third eye. So what's that at an angle, about 45 degrees or something?
45 is pretty steep. I mean, I'm looking out the window now at the top of the palm trees and that's not actually a very steep angle, but it's still up.
That's enough. Yeah.
Because we don't normally, if we're busy doing things, we don't normally look up at that angle, you know, level.
Well, the other thing is looking out into the distance.
Yeah.
And focusing on what you see. So, and that's a good... rest from thought and rest for your eyes. Like in my office in Waitatuna, I can look out at the bush and, you know, look at, oh, look, there's a bird. There was a couple of Canada geese in the tree this morning. I think it's mating season, isn't it? So
more Canada geese. We don't need any more Canada geese.
No, they're moving to Waitatuna now. So I haven't seen them in the tree, but they were honking away. And
right.
So just looking at that, it gives your mind a rest from thinking because you're focusing on the Canada geese, and it gives your eyes a rest from, you know, doing this negative self-talk or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, what about, like, something, like, I've kind of, I don't want to cast myself as someone who knows all this and has everything wired, but me compared to what I was 20 years ago, like, I do feel like I have some control over my emotional life. Like, I'm not, what's the way? Like preempting things, I think. Like if you notice that you're starting to have some thoughts that you know will send you into a depressed state or a mildly depressed, whatever, you know, downhill, you can make a decision to focus on something else.
Well, the thing is, again, if you notice that, then it's important to break out of that state before you try and put another state on top, because that's not going to work.
Well,
The ways that you can do that are imagine a stop sign or a red traffic light.
Yeah.
Or say stop, not when you're the passenger in a car, but, you know. But if you can say it out loud, then you actually hear it as well as seeing it.
Yeah.
So say stop, you know, sometimes something like a smell, like a essential oil, can break you out of that state. It could be putting on some music. So, you know, if you're feeling a bit down, put on something that's upbeat that you want to dance to or something, and dance for 5 minutes. That'll get you out of the state, and then, you know, you're in a different state to do whatever it is that you want to do. So it could be something that you hear, like music, or it could be, you know, calming, gentle music that might be more appropriate depending on where you're at.
Yeah.
So calming, gentle music, like if you're in a state of anxiety, something calm would be better. If you're feeling sad, then something upbeat might be better. So something you hear, something you see. So again, looking off into the distance or looking up, focusing on what you're actually looking at rather than just looking at it. It could be a feeling. So in NLP, there's a technique called anchoring. You want to be doing that, though, after you've got yourself out of the state. And again, people can go to the website and search for anchoring, and there's a whole lot of articles about that. So you could, so what have we got? Something you see, something you hear, something you feel. So it could be fiddling with something. Like I've got a koosh ball on my desk at home, and I'll fiddle with that for a bit, you know.
It's a squashy thing.
It's like a large pom-pom, but it's made of latex or something.
Yeah.
Something like those stress balls, all those little widget things that you have on your rings and things, something like that, and focusing on that.
They should be called stress relief balls.
Well, I think they are, actually.
Yeah, well, they are, but a stress ball sounds...
Like it's going to make you more stressed.
Yeah.
As I say, a smell can do it for some people, a taste.
Yeah.
So you're using your five senses, and then also noticing what you're saying to yourself, because it's probably not good. and so the other thing is to get it out of your head. So, you know, for writing things down. So sometimes people say, oh, you know, Steph, you've done it again, you made another mistake, blah, 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 you know, we go on.
Mm.
And then if you can challenge that, go, and you can write it down even, because it's then you're more objective because it's outside your head, it's on a piece of paper in front of you, and go, well, you know, is that actually true? You made another mistake. How many mistakes have you made today? Well, I've only made this one. Okay. So that means 99% of the time everything's going okay. You've only made one mistake, and a mistake is just a learning opportunity.
Mm.
It's just feedback that, you know, you didn't do something right. And if we didn't have feedback, then we wouldn't learn. So just being objective about it. And for some people, you know, typing it out on the computer or writing it out by hand. And again, there's articles about that as well on the website of how you can do that. So you can be objective about it instead of then beating yourself up and going, oh, actually, you know, when I look at it now, 98% of the day I've been really good and I made a mistake, which is just something that I learnt. And then it's like, what did you learn? Because once you've learnt it, you're not going to repeat it again.
I heard this interesting thing the other day. It was an interview with a guy called Mo Gaudet. Gaudet? Gaudet?
What's his name?
Mo Gaudet, I can't remember.
Gaudet.
Anyway, he did work for Google, but now he does all sorts of other stuff, and it talks a lot about happiness.
Right.
And he has, you know, the voice in your head that's always bringing you bad news,
yeah.
Or maybe it's always, sometimes bringing you bad news.
Mm.
He here's this technique. He gives it a name. He calls it Becky.
Yeah.
He calls it Becky, and it's like he's like, not now, Becky. Can we do this at 6 o'clock after I finish work?
Yeah.
And he didn't explain why he calls it Becky, but I think that very much separates it from who he is, being a guy.
Yeah.
And it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
The whole thing's kind of amusing, but I could see how that would work. Like, Becky. And it is the voice in our head is just one part of our brain, isn't it?
That's right.
It's not our whole self doing that.
No. And often the voice, you know, can sound like one of your parents or somebody, and then you think, oh, my God, I'm turning into whoever it was, you know.
Yeah.
So just on that, though, so I call it my internal terrorist. But sometimes, well, I say to people, yeah, give it a name. Give it a name. And then the other thing that you kind of touched on there is, you know, if you're feeling a bit stressed about something, then, or you're a worrier.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm a worrier if I don't control it, because that's what I learned from my mom.
Yeah.
She's worried if she hasn't got anything to worry about, you know.
Right, she's a world champion warrior.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, Olympic class.
And so it's kind of like, okay, set a time to worry. So you go, okay.
Which is similar to what this guy said.
So you go, okay, from 7 to 7:15, I'm going to spend 15 minutes worrying about this particular topic, because by doing that, it's rare that you'll spend 15 minutes because you're totally focused on the problem. Usually we worry about something and then we have to do something else, so we keep going back to it and chewing it over and worrying about it instead of going, okay, I'm going to focus on this until it's resolved.
It's actually hard to consciously worry.
That's what I mean. Try doing it for 15 minutes.
I can't even get a sentence out. Like if I consciously try to, like something's going on and like the voice is talking and then I'm like, okay, I'm going to consciously finish that thought, it just dries up.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because it's a different part of the brain that does the actual focused worrying figuring things out. It's a different part of the brain, I think.
Yeah, here's another thing that people can do. So we think that, you know, our brain's going all the time and it never stops. And if we could just do this now, you just stop and you ask yourself, I wonder what my next thought will be. So just do that. I wonder what my next thought will be.
The problem is I have to keep making noise on the
radio. You don't. Go on. I'll talk while you do it. Go on. Just say it out loud and then see what happens.
I wonder what my next thought will be.
Right. And what is it? Nothing, right?
Yeah. I'm waiting. Yeah. That's a meditation technique or something. It's like observing the thoughts.
And once
you've had it, you go, okay, that was a thought. And then...
Let it go, yeah. So those are all good as well. And this idea that, you know, I wonder what the next thought will be, as soon as you think that, there's nothing there. And it's like, where's all the thoughts gone? Right? It's like you're challenging the thoughts to come and they just disappear.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I wanted to talk about your phrase of calling that voice your internal terrorist. I know you've got a sense of humour and you like to laugh. So for you, that will be... That's an ironic title to give it.
Yeah.
I think there are some people out there who would be dangerous to give it a title like that. Because it'll really feel heavy. Whereas this guy calling his internal thought process Becky, it's kind of just a fun name in a lot of ways. It kind of disempowers it a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you know,
and yours as a joke disempowers it as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think, you know, that the funnier name you can give it, the better. You know, so if the name Becky is a funny name to you, give it that name. But if you can think of a funny name or a name that you think, you know, that, I mean, the main that just sprung to mind then was Griselda. You know, I don't know where that came from, but it was, I think it's probably from a Disney movie.
A story or something.
But it's like, it's not a name that people have, really.
You know? Yeah, yeah. There's no Becky's listening out there. I see that as a fun name, not a funny name.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so... A fun name, yeah, because or a funny name because that's going to break up the thoughts, even the fact that you've got a name for it, you know.
Yeah.
And so the other thing then is that voice, that Becky or internal terrorist, as I call it, it has a positive intention. You know, so what we do is we hear it and then we get, you know, down, further down because of what it's saying. But if you stop and actually listen to it and ask questions, the intention is always going to be positive because it's just another part of us, and all the parts of us have the intention is to keep us alive.
Yeah.
So, again, I've got another article on the website about it too. So it's like, if you sit quietly and say, what is the intention of this negative self-talk about whatever it is, and sit quietly, you'll get an answer. It might be, well, so you don't keep making mistakes. Okay. And so what's the intention of me making mistakes? Well, it's so that, you know, you don't get into trouble, or so that, because, you know, we might think, oh, I'm going to get into trouble because that might be what happened when you were a kid. If you made a mistake, you got into
always
trouble.
I feel like it's always going to come back to that for almost everybody, right? Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, so then it might be, okay, so you don't get into trouble and so that you don't waste time or that... you know, something else, and then you go, okay, and so what's the purpose of that? And it might be so you can learn. And it's like, okay, well, I've learnt now, so is it okay to shut up? You know, and so challenging the voice by, as I say, writing it down helps, because when you see it written down, it looks ridiculous, because I've done it, you know, I've gone and written stuff down, and go, that's ridiculous. Mm. What the hell am I worrying about that for? It's just totally, over the top. And so writing it down and then challenging the thoughts, like, is that really true? What's the positive intention of that? What does that do for you? What is it trying to do for you?
Yeah.
And then, you know, you could say, well, okay, I've learnt now. Is there another way that you could remind me that I've made a mistake without this negative thinking?
Yeah. Just send me a notification.
Because the thing is we all have parts of us, if you like, and sometimes the parts don't have any communication with each other. Often they do. So an example of a part could be I'd really like to go and work overseas, but my kids are too young and I need to take care of them. So it's often, I'd like this, but there's a but in the middle somewhere. And so there's one part that wants one thing and another part wants another thing. And when you examine what it is they want, that it's usually at some level it's the same thing. But because there's this conflict, it seems like a conflict, we have this, it's called... it's like a part separation. And there's an NLP process that will bring the parts together. But just to even acknowledging what that part is and what it wants and what's the other part wants, you can write it down and go, oh, okay, that part wants that. And what does it get through having that that's even more important? And they'll always come out to the same thing, which often is something like love, peace of mind or something.
Right, something so that, essential.
Trying to get the same thing but in different ways. And what happens is we associate with one part and not with the other part. And so the other part that's not been acknowledged, which because we consider it to be a negative part, kind of is trying to get our attention. So it's like knocking on the door.
Yeah.
To try and get our attention, and we're going, no, sorry, not now, I'm a bit busy with this other part that's positive, you know. And we carry on, and then the other part gets louder and louder until we end up having an anxiety attack or a panic attack, because then it's like that part's kicked the door down now, and then you're like, oh, my God, you know, I had a panic attack.
Yeah.
And so then we go to the doctors and get some drugs or something, and then...
to shut that part up.
Yeah, but it's as soon as you stop the drugs, it's going to come back because you didn't acknowledge it in the first place.
Yeah, or it might find another way to express itself.
Exactly. Because the issue hasn't been resolved. It's just been papered over. So all the, if we can recognise that, first of all the parts of us have an intention, a positive intention, because so at the end of the day, you know, we're here to be alive. And so those parts of us that creep out when we least expect it have got a positive intention. If we keep considering it a negative intention, then we're not going to pay attention to it. And if we pay attention to it and figure out what it's trying to tell us, then there's lots of ways that we can meet those intentions without having a panic attack. Yeah.
So
Aaron's nodding.
No, yeah, no. I was thinking of something that I was going to say and then decided no, there was going to be a distraction. There was something I wanted to talk about, though, about, and it comes back to a thing I think I was saying earlier, that there's levels of unhappiness and levels of all this stuff. And for something, if you've just started taking the first step into a negative thought, you can just say, I'm not going to do that, and you can walk away from it.
Right.
But if you're really deep down on the other end and you're like, you're really sad, and Steph says, put on some happy music, you put on the happy music and it just really pisses you off because it's like it's just too far away from where you are. Like right. I've had people say that.
Right.
Like, yeah, I just can't listen to that when I'm when I'm in this mood. And people might listen to, like we did when we were teenagers, what was the type of music, like The Cure and that right. kind of music, which was this very dark vibes.
Right. And that's
except some of it's quite happy. So,
yeah,
but do we need to strategically think, I can't go for the super happy stuff right now, that happy, happy, joy, joy just irritates me, but I shouldn't also go for the thing that matches exactly how I feel, like the deep, dark music.
No, that's just going to make you worse.
Or at least make you stay there.
Yeah.
Should we be aiming for something like a level up or... I don't know how to describe this.
I think it's useful to have some music that you know uplifts you that you can use to get you out of that state, because I'm not sure that I entirely agree that you can't get out of it.
I'm not saying you can't get out of it. I think like a big step from deeply sad to deeply happy is like
hard. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I'm not talking about going from deeply sad to deeply happy. I'm talking about going from deeply sad to kind of neutral.
Yeah,
because then when you're at that point, then you can go, okay, so what can I do now to lift my mood? What sort of things can I do that's going to make me start to feel, you know, I don't know, normal, not necessarily happy, but, you know,
Maybe
neutral,
just mild, maybe just, mildly irritated would be a goal.
Or even just kind of like, you know, open to different feelings.
Yeah.
And so having, but the same thing though, if people are getting annoyed by the music that they're putting on, first of all, they're putting it on. So have something that, have some songs queued up or music queued up that, you know, you want to dance to. And then when you put it on, actually listen to it.
Yeah.
Rather than just keeping in your in the same state of mind and going, I'm listening to this music, but I still feel bloody awful, you know.
Sometimes turning it up can be helpful, like really loud.
Yeah, I'd turn it up. If you can turn it up really loud, because, and if you're listening to it, you can't be doing the negative thinking. You can't do two things at the same time.
Yeah.
So the more that you focus on the music and just allow yourself to maybe dance with it, it depends where you are, of course, you know. I dance with my parrot. He loves dancing and singing. So it's very, and then he starts laughing because I'm singing. He thinks it's got to have a laughing part in it. So, you know, it's not very long before.
You don't work with anyone else, do you?
I do, but not with the parrot there, no. So I taught him to, I didn't teach him. I used to sing The Happy Wanderer. You know, it's a song I love to go wandering.
Yeah.
And then it's got follow-ree, follow-ah, follow-ree, follow-ha, ha, 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 ha. So he likes doing the laughing part. And so now he thinks that any song has got to have a laughing part, which he inserts at various times when we're singing.
Maybe people should get a parrot. Maybe that's the solution to this sort of thing.
So it's, you know, it's not very long before this laughing part comes in, and then, you know, a parrot laughing at you singing is quite funny in itself. So anyway, so there's certain songs that I'll put on that are upbeat and that I want to sing to and dance to, and it's, you know, it only takes the length of the song and then you're out of that state, and then it's a choice then, so you're free of whatever state you're in before. Then it's like, okay, how do I want to feel? So you can go back to that if you want to, but because we are in charge of our emotions, we can go, okay, I want to do something else. So then you might go, okay, I'm going to go for a walk now and look up, or I'm going to, you know, look at what the issue is, write it out and look at it objectively, or one of the other things we're talking about. Or I might go and find an anchoring technique on the website and use that to, so that I can have calm or peace or confidence.
Yeah. So I don't want to discount, belittle deep trauma and things that really are quite hard to get out of unhappiness. But I think in our culture, we must have a lot of bad habits in terms of maintaining, like, our emotional state. Like, we seem to keep, or maybe it's just the people I meet, aside from you. No, I think it is something in our culture that we tend toward the negative. I think, like, our news, this is one I always come back to, our news services is always negative news. And that's an inaccurate representation of the state of the world.
Mm.
But it's given, like, primacy, like, that's the most important thing. This is the stuff you need to know.
Yeah, well, that's the first thing terrible, I tell people is stop watching them.
Yeah,
this
terrible thing on the other side of the world that you've got no control over. You have to know all about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, that's obviously not
useful.
That's not helpful.
It's just going to contribute to your feeling. I mean, I haven't listened to the news for about 4 years now. I always think, if anything, if I need to know anything, I'll find out. Okay, there's some things I can do things about, and the news isn't one of them, you know. And it just keeps people in a state of fear the whole time.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then, I don't know, when the last time I watched it, which was, sometimes I hear it when I'm, you know, like 2 minutes on the radio when I'm driving in or something. You know, sometimes at the end of the news, they used to have like a 2 minute kind of uplifting thing, you know?
Yeah.
So just put it on for the last 2 minutes and hear the uplifting thing, because there's lots of good things happening in the world. Okay, there's bad things too, but if we focus on them, when you can't do anything about them, that's just going to contribute to feeling worse.
Yeah, yeah.
And if we focus on what we can do something about, focus on the things that we're grateful for, focus on the people that are important to us and maybe what we can do for them, you know, to help them out. You know, doing something for somebody else is going to get you out of it. And also, as I said, when people have been depressed for a long time, like I had a guy come to see me and I said, oh, you know, he said he was depressed and he was looking down at the floor when I went to greet him in the reception area, which is a while ago. And I said to him, I said, so what's the problem? He said, oh, I'm depressed. And I said, okay, how long have you been depressed for? And he goes, and then he looks up and he goes, well, I'm 29 now, so 12 years. Mm. And I went, okay, so 12 years. And when weren't you depressed? And he goes, well, I was okay yesterday, right? So so noticing when you're not depressed or noticing when you're feeling okay and when you're feeling good, and like what percentage of the time do you actually feel good? So, you know, I agree. I think personally, I think just about everybody's had some kind of trauma, you know, and it could be different for each person. And so traumas are something that need to be dealt with. So that's where coaching or something like that will come in. You can't get rid of the trauma, but you can look at it from a new perspective and reframe it.
Mm.
Because there was still something to learn from it. So it's about taking on board the learnings and separating the feelings from the trauma, which is an NLP technique to remember what happened but separate the feelings from it so you don't have to keep remembering it and re-experiencing it over and over again and making it worse.
Yeah.
So every time you have to revisit a negative memory or a trauma, then you reinforce it. And it just makes it worse and worse and worse, even talking about it. So, you know, people don't even talk about it. It's like, I don't need to know what it is. I'll take you through this process and then we'll see what you feel like at the end of it. And it, what it does is, it separates the emotional aspect of it from the event itself. So you can still remember it and take on whatever it was that you could learn from it. But you don't have to keep re-experiencing all the negative emotions associated with it.
You must have people who say, but I really want to tell you about it, or you can tell they really want to tell you about it. Do you stop them in that moment?
Yeah, because as soon as I know that it's a trauma, I don't need to know anymore because I know that if they carry on, they're going to traumatise themselves again.
Yeah.
And so, and often it can become part of a person's identity.
Yeah.
That, you know, that's who they are, and if they didn't have that, who would they be? Which is really sad. So, you know, I just need to know that it's a trauma and they can tell me when it started and when it finished. So it could be, you know, just a specific thing that happened for a few minutes, or it could be something that went on for years. The process still works with PTSD and all these different things as well. And then it's kind of like the person just carries on as normal and they forget that they even had the thing in the first place, because those kind of things are sitting in the unconscious mind, and a lot of NLP is working with the unconscious mind because that's the part that keeps it in place. It thinks, well, you need to know this and I'm just going to remind you again. Where the conscious mind's going, I don't need to know this, you know, but it keeps reminding you. So,
well, yeah, it's like it's a dangerous world out there. Yeah. I know it's a dangerous world. I've got to keep reminding you. In case you make a mistake and we end up in danger again.
Yeah, exactly. And you need to be on your guard all the time, you know, so then people are anxious all the time in case somebody's going to jump out and stab them or something, you know.
Yeah, that definitely is going to be a point where you can only notice the bad things and you can't notice the good things.
That's right.
Unless there's some stunningly good event happens.
Yeah, even then, you know, if people have got a negative viewpoint on the world because of what's happened to them in the past, they won't even see that as good. It'll be like, well, that's something good. Now something bad's going to happen to compensate for it. Or that idea of, you know, things always come in threes, bad things always come in threes.
Oh, God, that's not helpful, is it?
No, exactly. So then they count it. Well, I've had one, so there's another two coming, and then they start looking for them.
So the strategy is to say, I've had one, I must have already had two, and find two others and say, oh, that's the last one, that's three, it's done.
That's right, that's a good strategy.
If you're going to mess with your own mind, you might as well mess with it in a positive way.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's either or, right? It doesn't really matter. And there are a lot of guys who are like, oh, I like fixing things. I like solving problems and fixing things.
Yeah.
And I think after a while, and that can be satisfying, but after a while you just start looking for problems to fix, and then all you see is a world with problems to fix.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many...
you've only got a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Yeah. I think it's predominantly guys anyway who tend to do this. It starts off satisfying, so you want more of that, but then I think we turn the world into a negative place full of things that need fixing.
Well, it's interesting because there's an assumption there that people need fixing and that you're the one to do it, which means that underlying that is that the belief that people can't fix their own problems You know, so, for example, if somebody comes to me with an issue, I know that they haven't been able to solve it themselves. That doesn't mean to say they can't fix it.
Yeah.
What I think is that I'm the facilitator to help them to get in touch with the part they can fix it and fix it themselves. Because otherwise, every time they have a problem, they're going to come and see me. Or the problem solver that solves the problems for them.
Well, that'd be good for you financially, Steve.
Yeah, well, and this is the thing, you see. It's like, I can't do that, though.
Yeah, of course.
Because it's kind of like, if I see people more than three times, I think I'm doing something wrong, you know?
Yeah.
Because it shouldn't take forever. You know, like if somebody's got a problem, it usually came on in a few seconds. You know, so why should it take years to fix? Mm. You know, if somebody's got a phobia of something, it usually happened because of something that happened, like a trauma or, I don't know, some event.
Which momentary event.
Yeah, it's right. So why does it have to take forever to fix it, you know?
Yeah.
It shouldn't. So I forgot where I was going with that now.
I was talking about guys who like to fix things.
Oh, yeah.
They're always looking for problems to fix, so all they see is problems.
That's right, they see as problems. Yeah. But the other thing is, you know, so there was, is that if you look for problems and you're a problem solver, then you don't give people the opportunity to solve their own problems. So it's like that thing of, you know, if you give a man a fish, you feed him for a day, but if you teach him how to fish, in other words, teach him how to solve his own problems, then you feed him for a lifetime.
It's kind of quite paternalistic, isn't it?
Well, it's kind of, and actually, the other thing is, it's like, it's not about the person anymore, it's about you feeling good because you've solved a problem.
Yeah.
And so the instant that you don't solve a problem, it's your fault. So the person's not taking responsibility for resolving their own problems. And even things like reflective listening, saying back to the person what they've said to you using some of the same words will trigger them to go, oh, yeah, there's something, that, you know, and they'll often solve their own problems by you just doing that rather than you thinking that you have to solve the problem.
So that's a savior victim dynamic,
which
is never healthy.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So then you become the rescuer.
Yeah.
And the other person's a victim. And so they go, well, they might not say I'm a victim, but they go, oh, you know, I need Aaron because he can solve the problem for me. And so then you get queues of people coming up to ask you how to solve the problem.
Jeepers. It's a little alarming.
Well, look, he's one. Yeah. No, I'm just having you on.
Yeah, good.
So yeah, you know, you
but I have been that person.
But if you think about it logically, though, so if you think anybody this is, I can help people, I can solve people's problems. So the assumption is that you know more than the person that's got the problem and that they're incapable of solving their own problems.
Mm.
So that's not really a healthy dynamic to start with, you know. Like if people can solve their own problems, they might just need some guidance so that they can get in touch with their internal resources that's going to help them solve the problem. And then they feel good. Because they've solved their own problem, and you feel good because you've helped facilitate them getting in contact, in touch with their own resources. Mm. You know, and there's a difference there. Then you don't have to be, you know, the go to for everybody that's got an issue.
Folks, we are talking to Stephanie Philp. It's Inside Your Mind segment. We were talking about emotional states and how to have some control over them. Yeah, yeah. But that's, I think, what you're talking about there is, for someone who's a fix it person, is this is something to consider about what's going on.
Yeah.
And I brought up the fix-it people because after a while you just see problems everywhere and that can be a little overwhelming because you think you have to solve all of them.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
And it sends, it's called a meta message to people, you know, like I said, that they're incapable of solving their own problem. It's a message that we send when other than through what we say.
Mm.
You know, like when you ring up a company and you're hanging on the phone forever and they say, you know, your call really is important to us, and you go, yeah, right, you know, I've only been hanging on for 45 minutes.
So the meta message is your call is not that important.
Yeah, and, you know, our time is more important than yours, etc. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Do you want to recommend, have you got an article on your website, which is also called InsideYourMind.com?
Well, if they go to InsideYourMind.com, there's articles. There's 97. I was looking at them the other day. So just put in a keyword in the search and see what comes up, because I can't remember what they're all called.
You can't remember them all.
But basically, once I've written it and put them up, I'm over it. So then I forget what they're called. Okay. I've got a spreadsheet at home, but I didn't bring it with me.
Strangely. You didn't carry your spreadsheet around. No, you brought your phone with you. Is it on there?
Yeah, yeah. Well, no.
It's not. Okay. All right, Steph, all right. Yeah. Thank you for coming in.